At McNamara & Associates, we've been helping the people of Ipswich and surrounding areas with their legal needs for over 70 years. If you have a legal problem, we've got the solution. Call us now on 135828. Now here's your podcast.
In family law disputes, invariably the conversation soon turns to the custody of the children. To discuss custody generally, I'm with David Millwater of McNamara Associates. David, what do people mean when they refer to the term custody?
And Dan, that's a good question, actually, because a lot of people often say, oh, they would like to go for full custody, or they're after, you know, full access to their children. The interesting thing with that is that those terms are really ones that tend to cause the judges and the courts to become upset these days, because the concepts of custody and access, whilst the idea behind it still remains similar, the concepts or the naming of it has changed, and now the courts really prefer people to say that the child lives with and spends time with each parent. The reason behind that is, I think, is that really the way the family law legislation is designed is to prioritise the interests and the needs of the children. And I think the terms custody and access tend to import this idea that it's the rights of the parents that are more important rather than the children, where really the onus of the court these days is on the children and their interests. So the idea of full custody is often just a bit of a mind shift, I find, that means thinking about, well, who does the child live with and how much time do they spend with the other party?
Yeah, it's got that sort of connotation of ownership, doesn't it? That, you know, yes, I own the child and therefore the child will live with me without, you know, having any, you know, greater insight into what is best for the child.
Well, that's right. And look, I suppose the thing is that those type of arrangements where a child lives with one parent and doesn't spend any time or very limited time with the other parent do happen from time to time, but they only generally happen where there is a significant reason or a need in the child's best interest for that type of arrangement. An example of that, I suppose, is where there's very significant domestic violence or where there's very serious drug or alcohol abuse. The court will then make an order to say that the child will live with one parent and only spend limited or supervised time with the other parent. And in some cases, if it's serious enough, there's no time with the other parent at all. But generally, there is this concept that the children should have a meaningful relationship with both parents. And so where that's possible, the court does try to make sure that the children have that relationship with both parents.
David, how does the court determine, you know, that decision? So what information do they pull to, you know, analyse and assess and make sure they're making a good judgment?
Well, it is a fairly long process, I might say, to start with. The starting point is usually that the parties obviously put together their court documents, which includes affidavits or sworn statements by each party. But the difficulty with that is that, and the court recognises this, is that parties will put things in affidavits that are different from each other, obviously. Each party kind of pleads their own case in their, in their material. So what the court then tries to do is have some independent inquiry as to what the best interests of the children might be. The way they do that, there's a number of things. The first thing that they might do is get a family report, which is where the parties go and see an independent person who is kind of qualified in social work and counselling, but they're termed a family consultant. So basically the family consultant interviews the parties and interviews the children and sees how the children interact with each parent. And obviously this depends on how old the children are, depending upon what the family consultant will do in these interviews. But at the end of that process, they write this long report that runs for usually about 20 pages called a family report, that throughout it will analyse what's happening and what's best for the kids, but at the end point of it is that it gives some recommendations as to you know, what should happen, who the children should live with, what time they should spend with the other party, those types of things. The second part of it is, after a family report, the court might also think about appointing an independent child lawyer, which is, as it sounds, a lawyer that investigates and informs the court on what is actually best for the child rather than what the parents' positions are.
Is there a better time than others, David, to, you know, lock down decisions in this respect?
Oh, Dan, this is the conversation I have with people straight away.
Yeah.
It's very important for them to, well, for anybody to have an idea as to what's going to happen in the future, and so they can kind of understand the law, understand what a judge might think or what a court might do in the future if they were to turn up in front of a court, unfortunately. So this is the type of conversation I have with my clients on the very first day when I meet them as to what the process is and what the judge might consider, particularly along the lines of, you know, doing what's in the best interest of the children, and also going to family reports and what might happen at those types of things. So, yeah, it's something that people need to know very much up front. The interesting thing about family law cases, and probably most cases that end up seeing a court, is that they are a kind of a living thing, in that when you first talk to somebody on the first day, you tell them what you think about it based on the information that they're giving you at that time, but then it is, as I say, it does kind of evolve, and it might change throughout the course of the matter. And the strong point, I suppose, to make on that is that when we receive a family report, you read the family report, and that gives you a lot of insight as to what a court might do. So I guess legal advice does change and evolve based on what is happening throughout the course of the matter.
Dave, what about those occasions where, you know, both parties, the spouses, have come to an agreement themselves about the children? It might be that, well, look, you know, you're going to have the children, you know, pretty well all year round, and dad's going to have the children during school holidays, or whatever the case might be. How are those agreements you know, reflected in the context of what we just talked about, making sure that decisions are always based on the best interests of the child?
Well, Dan, it's fantastic when people can agree. And the first thing, I suppose, I'd make the point that if parties can agree, then that's, in most cases, going to be a really great thing for the children, because what we do see as family lawyers that children suffer and you know, have sometimes long-term psychological damage as a result of parents being in conflict. Mm. So if parents are not in conflict and they can agree, then that's fantastic. That being said, sometimes people do come up with agreements that we like to kind of check and maybe fine-tune a little bit just to make sure that they are in the best interest of the children. I suppose an example of that is that sometimes there might be very frequent changeovers, say, you know, two or three changeovers per week of children going back and forth between households. Sometimes that can work, and sometimes that's the only practical solution to the problem or to the arrangement. But in a lot of cases, it's actually better to minimise the number of times that children go back and forth between their various households. And I suppose some of the judges illustrate this really well, is that I was in court recently when two lawyers handed up an agreement that their clients had made, and the judge challenged the lawyer, saying, well, hang on, these children are going back and forth three times in one week in this agreement. Why are they doing that? How's that good for them? And the judge then went on to say, well, hang on, parents, how would you like to change your residence three times? Because that's what you're doing to your children. So I suppose the thing is, if people can agree, that is fantastic, but sometimes we do need to have a little bit of a look behind the agreement just to see that it is best for the kids.
Mm. There is a lot to it. David, thanks for joining me.
Thanks, Dan.
Thanks for listening. If you have any questions, call us on 135828.